Join RNIB Connect and become part of a wider and stronger community led by blind and partially sighted people. Membership is free, and it's the best way to keep in touch with things that are of interest and help to you. You'll receive Connect magazine, our membership publication, in your chosen format, as well as having the chance to be amongst thousands of like-minded, blind and partially sighted people, friends, families and supporters. You'll also be able to take part in and organise social activities in your area, campaign for change and improve the lives of people with little or no sight, and get help from our dedicated RNIB Connect support team. It couldn't be easier to join RNIB Connect. Simply complete the online form at rnib.org.uk or join over the phone by calling 0303 1234 555.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Weekly Connect. This is the show that talks about life as a blind or partially sighted person and the truth that goes with it. Yeah, some of the difficult conversations, some of the realities of sight loss, and some of the joys, some of the fun bits as well. It's not all doom and gloom. With me as always, I'm Stephen Scott, by the way. She is...
Jill Barclay. How are you doing this week, Stephen?
Good. Lovely to have you back. I know you were away a couple of weeks, but I'm so glad to have you back here. I missed you.
Oh, I missed you too. I really, really did. Life is not the same without, you know, my weekly catch up on the Weekly Connect.
Yeah, exactly. It's a good place. I feel it's like an hour-long therapy session every week. We just get to sort of come in here, put our positions forward, and I leave feeling better.
Oh, I do too, very much so. And I think, yeah, listening in the last couple of weeks, I was actually sitting, you know, in front of my TV. I was watching on Freeview 7:30, obviously. And, you know, sitting thinking, I want to get in there. I just want to get my oar in. You know how I love to get my oar in, Stephen. So.
Well, with us this week, we have our special guest. As always, we like to bring someone on to talk, and everyone is welcome on this, by the way. So if you have something to say, then you're more than welcome to come on. The Weekly Connect at rnib.org.uk is our email address. Joe, we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, aren't we? We're on all the social media things the kids are on.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. We're right up there.
Yeah, we're amongst them all. Do you know, I said this, I think it was on Tech Talk, I said this last time, that my niece said to me, "You're not on Facebook, are you? That's for old people."
Yes, I've actually been told that I'm too old to be on Twitter.
Wow. Can I ask, what is it that they're using? Because I only know Twitter and Facebook.
Well, yeah, I do too.
What are they using? I dread to ask, actually. I don't think I want to be any part of it. I think I'll just stick with Twitter and Facebook with the oldies. Well, anyway, if you're one of us, then you can come on and send us messages at RNIB Radio. If you're young or young at heart, then you can get in touch with us there. We're on Facebook as well. RNIB Connect Radio is where you will find us. But with us this week, our special guest is Dan Williams. I'm saying Dan, actually. Your name is Daniel. Do you prefer Dan or Daniel?
No, Dan Williams, yeah.
You prefer Dan. I always like to check that because I'm not a Steve. I've been called Steve I don't know how many times, and I hate it. I'm not cool enough to be a Steve. Please someone
else. No, I'm definitely a Dan. I'm cool enough to be a Dan.
Cool, you sound cool enough to be a Dan, Dan. But Dan. Steve, yeah, you're definitely not.
No, thanks.
I'm Dan the blind man.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, do you know, it's funny. I saw a friend of mine. I caught up with a friend of mine in the last few days that I haven't seen for 23 years. And we were at school together and she keeps calling me Gillian. And it's so funny to hear that because I stopped calling myself Gillian because I thought it sounded a little bit kind of blue rinsey. And started calling myself Jill, and she thought that sounded terribly grown up. So there you go.
Yeah, I think Gillian's, it's a nice name though.
It is.
Jill, Gillian, they're nice names. But Jill is very much the sort of funner version of Gillian.
I think so.
Yeah. And you definitely, yeah. there's no
like
way.
It's like your alter ego.
Yeah, there's no way we couldn't put you in the fun category, that's for sure. But listen, Dan, you are from Visualize, and I'd like to start off perhaps by telling us a bit about you and a bit about Visualize.
Okay, great. So my name is Daniel Williams. I'm the founder of Visualize Training and Consultancy. So we work with organizations to empower staff to be more confident when communicating and assisting blind or partially sighted customers. And I also do workplace assessments. So for access to work and also privately. So any employee that has a visual impairment that is struggling, we basically work with their with the employee to make sure that they get all the adjustments that they need to make sure that they just do their job as good as everybody else, as we all know that we can.
Wow. So it's quite a that's quite an empowering job, and I guess quite a, an enjoyable job for you,
definitely.
I imagine. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I really enjoy what I do. I wake up in the morning, you know, ready to go to work, loving going to work and supporting blind and partially sighted people to achieve what they can. But also, you know, educating the general public about visual impairment and making them confident to communicate and not be scared to say things like see you later and see you next week and all that sort of thing that people are just really fearful of, really.
Mm. Well, it sounds like a great thing. And yeah. Great, more power to you on it. We'll get some details at the end for those who might want to know more about the organisation, Visualize. But tell us a bit about you, Dan. What's the fun side of Dan do? I mean, aside the job when you wear your cape and you save people and all that stuff, you know, what do you do for fun?
So I just like really just chilling out with friends, catching up, going on holidays. I like to travel. So I've been to Gran Canaria in the last year, been to Jamaica in the last 3 years. So I like to travel, see new places, go out with friends. But whenever we go out with friends, we always seem to go to a new place in the UK. So we like to mix it up a bit and not really stay in the same place all the time. You know,
do you know, I'm very much like that. Really. I'm very much like that, Dan. I like to go new places and holiday particularly. And people will say to me, why don't you go back to the same place all the time?
Because it's so boring.
You know, you'll know it. And if you've seen it before you lost your sight, then you'll have an idea of where you are. And the whole point is I like to experience new places,
new places,
smells, new environments, new sounds, everything. Mm-hmm. So, no, I'm with you on that one, Dan.
Yeah, definitely meeting new people and, you know, just broadening your horizons, really.
And that kind of brings us to our first topic. Now, as always on the show, we have three topics we're going to discuss. And your first one, I think, is a real standout, actually, because this is happening to a lot of blind and partially sighted people out there who have guide dogs.
Yeah.
I think most people know where I'm going to go with this. But you've had a guide dog now for... Now, I know when you got in touch with us, it was about 4 weeks, roughly.
Yeah,
it's been about six weeks now. So... you had your guide dog 6 weeks, and tell us how many times you've been refused entry to places?
4 times so far.
Wow.
Incredible. Just incredible. Do you know, I have been refused places with my guide dog before, actually twice from the same place. They had their knuckles wrapped twice and still didn't learn their lesson. But, do you know, Dan, I don't know how it affected you. I feel very, very sad that a new guide dog owner has experienced this so quickly, you know, within, you know, the space of weeks of getting your guide dog. I think that could be really, really damaging for somebody that maybe doesn't have a lot of confidence and is out for their dog for the first time. How did it affect you?
It made me feel, you know, like a second-class citizen, and it made me feel really uneasy, to be honest. It made me feel really, really uneasy. And I, to be honest, initially when I was signing up to get on the guide dog list, I didn't think that this would happen. I've heard about it a lot of times, and I thought that it was one of them things that would never happen to me. And sort of to have a guide dog for 4 weeks and then it happened 4 times. I was like, oh my gosh, that was, you know, and it was actually played a factor in making me not really want a dog. It did sort of cross my mind that maybe I don't want a dog because I can't be bothered with the hassle and the stress that it might cause me being kicked out of places, really.
Do you know, it sounds pretty unprecedented in that, you know, I have to say, Dan, you've had real, real bad luck. That has not happened to me, you know, in succession like that. And I've been a guide dog owner since I've been 20. So unfortunately, you've just had a really bad start. I have to admit, most people... The majority of people are absolutely fine with access, but it still is hard to believe in this day and age. And even if you go into a shop that has the sticker, you know, no dogs except guide dogs, there's still some of those shops that are refusing you entry.
Yeah, and I think because of the job that I do, I work UK wide. So, you know, every day is different for me and I'm all over the place. So I'm not in one static place where I'm going to like the local shop every day and the local pub every day. You know, I am in a different place every day. So for me, I think I'm going to come up a lot more than probably generally people do.
I think that's, you know, I don't have a guide dog at the moment. It is something I've been thinking about doing, Dan. Because I'm at that level where I think maybe this would be better for me. But I tend to think that I hear these stories and they kind of, maybe shouldn't say this, but they do, they kind of make me nervous about going forward and getting a guide dog, because I think, I don't know how much I could be bothered with that. I always think about this from, if you go out for dinner with friends, and imagine going into a restaurant and you've got maybe six people and you get told, I'm sorry, but, you know, we're not allowing you in with the dog. That would be horrific, wouldn't it? I mean, because it doesn't, it's one thing that happens to you on your own, because you say, okay, fine, I'm annoyed about it, but I'll move on. But if you were with people, and you know, I wouldn't generally go out for dinner on my own anyway, you know, so you imagine that, all your friends being kicked
See,
out.
In saying that, Stephen, I get what you're saying, but I have to say that I would use it as an opportunity to educate the restaurant or the staff, or, you know, speak to the manager about educating their staff. And if that didn't work, then I would be annoyed. It is slightly embarrassing, but at the same time, you know, people like myself, yourself, Dan, we've all got tongues in our heads. I am not frightened to push my case forward. Where I am very sad for people is when, you know, if they're maybe not as kind of vocal as I am or as we are, and it puts them off actually leaving their house or going into that shop again, or you know, going out with their guide dog per se.
And I guess you're right. Well, I was just going to probably say the same thing, because I think you're right. I think we have to do that, because if we don't, then that creates problems for the next person, doesn't it? And, you know, it's funny, but we talked about this a couple of weeks ago in the show, and I was kind of railing against this idea of being the ambassador for blind people, because, you know, anytime I go somewhere, I've got to, you know, make sure that I tell people, you know, well, you know, if they offer you help across the road, you must be nice to them and all that. And I was kind of like, okay, all right, to an extent. But I think you're right, Jill. I think with a guide dog, you would have to, because you know that the next person who walks into that store would get the same treatment, or the restaurant, or whatever it was. In your case, Daniel, without naming the places, obviously, where was it? Was it the same place, different places all the time, or?
So it's been actually two. So I live in Cardiff, so it's been twice in Cardiff, and then it's also, I was working in Leeds, and also working in London. It happened in Leeds and London. But again, once it's happened a few other times, but sometimes you educate people and you tell them this is a guide dog and they realise what it is, they realise the law, then sometimes they will just let you in anyway. The times where it is classed as, you know, proper discrimination in a way is that when you educate them, but they still don't want to listen to you and they still won't let you in. And I think, you know, there's different types of discrimination to an extent. There's sort of, you know, a traffic light system, as you can appreciate, whereas the ones that will, you educate them and they let you in, they're sort of a green. And the ones that sort of tell you to get out once you've educated them, they're sort of a red. So I think you've got to look at it in that sort of system, because that is sort of how it sort of manifests itself, really.
What I cannot understand is what is difficult about this. This is the bit I just don't get. I mean, I can understand if someone has, you know, started a job and they don't really understand all the laws and the rules and all the rest. But surely it's the job of a manager. Surely it's the job of the person who walks in the shop, the actual worker themselves, to maybe notice that sign on the door that says no dogs except guide dogs, which is such a common phrase, you know, that exists across signage, across shops and restaurants and all these kind of things. It doesn't seem difficult to me. Why are we still having problems with this? And, you know, we're talking about it. We're not the only ones talking about it. There are people doing this all the time, talking about different issues. But it keeps happening more and more, and the instances of it seem to be increasing all the time. What is going on? What's wrong?
Yeah, and a lot of people are not reporting it as well. You know, I read some guide dog statistics, about 75% of guide dog owners being refused access and only 10% of them actually speaking up about it and reporting it. So, you know, there's a lot of people out there that actually just don't bother reporting it as well. So, and I've had people saying that the dog is it a police dog? Am I a police officer? I've had people saying, am I a dog trainer? So not everyone actually knows what a guide dog is. So that, you know, the perception is that everyone should know what it is, but a lot of people don't know what it is, you know,
Do you know
which is
Dan,
quite surprising for me.
Do you know something, Dan? I have a miniature dachshund. And yeah. People ask me if that's my guide dog. It's incredible. And see, when you consider that, you know, there's been so many influential blind people in the world. I mean, you've got the likes of, you know, Stevie Wonder and Ray Charles. And, you know, you've got David Blunkett, who was pretty much the most powerful man or one of the most powerful men in the UK at one point. Going about with his guide dog. You would think that, people would have a little more understanding of blindness or know a bit more about it or just accept it a bit more.
But I also think that, you know, you don't see guide dogs or disabled people really on TV at prime time times. So, you know, there's a lack of awareness within the general public just on prime time TV. You know, if you're watching soaps or things like that, you don't really see guide dog owners, assistance dog owners. So we don't really get much publicity, so people understand. And I think that's part of the problem as well. You know?
Do you know, I've actually brought that up with the soaps before because I've done a little bit of acting, you know, from time to time. And I've been in touch with the soaps and I've said, you know, you need a blind character with a guide dog, i.e. me.
or me.
I mean, I told them straight, you need me.
What would you play? Would you play like a dark character? Would you be someone who is mysterious, you know, serial killer? Or would you be, you know, nice person? I'm guessing serial killer. Just
probably. Saying. I think I would be a lovable rogue.
Like a Pat Phelan.
Well, he's not really a lovable rogue, is he? He's kind of hateable rogue. but, you know, I think I would definitely be a lovable rogue, but I would have to have a dark side.
Yeah. Sorry, okay, we've kind of drifted off that one.
And you could get the guide dog owner going into the shop and being refused so that people have more awareness of it. People just don't know. You know, that's the thing. When I've told people, oh, I've got refused, they're like, what do you mean you've got refused? And then you explain to them. They're like, what? I didn't even know that was a thing, you know?
It's
just
true
a big lack of
say.
Awareness generally.
It's true what you say. When you do see disabled people on the likes of soap operas and primetime television, it does tend to be people in wheelchairs. I think, you know, wheelchair seems to be the kind of pan disability that everybody kind of looks to when they're thinking of having a disabled person in a soap. So,
I know we're drifting away from guide dogs here, but, you know, it does tie this in. But I just wonder if that's because people think, oh, how would a blind person learn their lines? Or, you know, how would they know? Or, you know, I just wonder if it's fundamental, if it's baked in at the start. People just think we're not as capable as other disabled people, which is utterly ridiculous when you say that. It just seems ridiculous.
I was told I'd never be a television presenter because I couldn't read autocue. I was told that by a television producer.
Yeah, that's right. I was told that as well. And, you know, you could never do television. It would always be radio. But that's because I've got the face for it. Jill, you could do television, no problem, but TV just eludes me for more reasons than one. But
it's all about diversity, isn't it? They need a face for everything.
Well, maybe I'll fit one day. Yeah, you never know.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's interesting because I was watching the weather news the other night. The weather came on the telly, and there was a girl on, and I don't know if she's been on before or she's new, but I noticed she only had one arm.
Yeah,
and I thought, do you know what was great about seeing that was, first of all, she's in a position where she's doing her job and her disability has got nothing to do with it. What I tend to find with blind people is, and I guess disabled people to some extent, but certainly blind people, whenever it's brought up in public, it's because of the disability. Rather than being there because, I mean, I kind of joke around the whole serial killer on a, you know, soap idea, but, you know, Jill as that lovable rogue person, that, you know, that would be great. Because it would break down that barrier of it's, you know, all about the blindness. Or she's here because she's here to educate us on blindness. Why can't she just be her? Why can't she just be Jill, the lovable
I think
rogue?
That's a good idea. I think we need to email the director of EastEnders or Coronation Street. Or
well,
something.
If everybody could actually write on my behalf. And in fact, if you want to get some kind of petition on my behalf, I'd be very grateful.
I'll sign it. I think it would be great to see. But there is, I do know, because my mother told me this, that there is a blind girl in Coronation Street who has a guide dog. And she just occasionally walks by. She's an extra. and she just walks by in the background.
Is this my rival?
I think it might be.
Oh, my goodness.
She's in there first. But isn't it interesting? Why is she not part of the show? Why couldn't she be part of the programme? And it just seems crazy. It's as if it's a great advert for guide dogs, and I know ITV do a lot of work with guide dogs, so maybe that's where that's come in from. But I don't know. But again, we don't want tokenism, do we? We want to be part of... We're part of everyday society talking about these things. We don't always want to end up on the last leg. Oh, we're disabled, so that's your show over there.
Kind of
thing. I think that's the challenge. But you know, going back to the guide dogs and the refusals, I mean, you know, it's not just... I mean, in your case, you've been into places where you've been refused. But of course, a lot of people face issues with taxis as well, and that's another big challenge.
Yeah. So I did have an issue with a taxi driver, although I've had a few, actually. Although they've taken me. I had one issue where he took me and then he said to me, there's no point in me taking you really because now I have to go and clean my car and come off the road for an hour and it's going to cost me to clean the car, so your fare's sort of pointless. although he took me, you know, he still sort of discriminated against me in a way because it made me feel very uncomfortable in that journey.
Do you know, I've had that umpteen times, Dan. Yeah. That is one thing that I can say has happened, you know, a lot to me over the last, you know, 20 years or so. And I think it does make you feel really, really dejected because, you know, you feel as if they're doing you a favor by taking you. And you know, the number of people that will say to me, oh, you know, look at the dog here and, oh, my car's all hairy. And I just think, well, you know, he is a dog. And short of, you know, shaving him or skinning him, you know, there's going to be dog hair. And you know, I'm sorry for that. But at the end of the day, it's not the greatest thing in the world, is it? You've got your sight.
But at the end of the day, Joe, it's a public service that these guys are these guys and women are providing. And, you know, people are getting in their car with dirty shoes. They're getting in there with fake hair, which is going to fall out. You know, they're getting in there with makeup on. You know, there's going to be dirt. They have to clean their car. It's a public service. It's just a fact of life. So they need to deal with that. And they need to, you know, first of all, have some awareness training so that they understand it. And the problem is with taxi drivers, it's not compulsory to have awareness training. So I know guide dogs are doing a campaign at the moment to try and make it compulsory that they all have awareness training as part of becoming a taxi driver.
So since all of that happened, since you've had the refusals, what's happened since?
So since I've had the refusals, I've contacted guide dogs and they've sort of wrote a nice fluffy letter to the company telling them, giving them a slap on the wrist and telling them not to do it again. And they've sent them a leaflet telling them what they should do, which is all well and good. And, you know, that's really good because it's going to help other guide dog owners. However, I was still discriminated against. So I've actually taken legal steps now to address the two companies concerned. And one of them has actually offered me a settlement, to out of court settlement, to compensate me for injury to feelings of how I felt. And the other one I'm waiting for a response on. But on that note, I would just say to everyone out there that guide dogs as an organization, they don't have legal powers attached to them. They don't have lawyers attached to them. They can write letters to them, but they're not going to pursue anything legally. So, you know, there is an organization out there called Unity Law or Fry Law, which will take on cases pro bono and no win, no fee. So you don't have to assume that it's going to cost you lots of money to fight these companies. If you feel like you want to, you should, you know, just go and do it, because at the end of the day, people are discriminating against you. Why should we be discriminated against?
Do you think that there's maybe a chance that if people do sort of bring in the legal side of things every time they're discriminated against, do you think there's a possibility that we as blind people could be seen as being nothing but a crowd of moaners and, you know, to get on with it? And what would you say to that, Dan?
I would say no, because, you know, I am mixed race. My dad is Jamaican and I'm white. And if the same way, if someone was racist to me, I wouldn't accept it. You know, I'm not just going to give them a slap on the wrist. I'm going to call the police and get them arrested. If you go into a shop and someone steals something, you know, they have to be punished for what they've done. It's exactly the same thing. If you've been discriminated against, we need to fight them with the law, because the law's there to protect us. So we need to use it. Otherwise, what's the point of the law at the end of the day? You know, I would say that, because there's all these companies out there that, will write you an apology letter, but they'll still do it again. Whereas if they've got to pay money out to you, then actually what they'll do is they probably won't do it again, because they you know, they all think about money. They're all money financially driven, a lot of these companies.
I think that's a really interesting point, actually, because we do forget this is the law we're talking about here. I mean, people who don't let you into a taxi or don't let you into a building, that is against the law. You can't do that.
Yeah.
And I think that we maybe haven't had any high-profile cases, unfortunately. And that's just because people who are facing this maybe just don't have the money in the bank to be able to do it.
No, but again, that's picking up on that point. That's the perception. The perception is that they think it's going to cost them a lot of money to fight it. But again, back to Fry Law, they will take it on no win, no fee. They're the only company in the country, law company in the country, that will take it on no win, no fee. So, you know, that's why people need to contact places like that to actually get the support. They will fight equality cases.
But to Jill's point, though, I think there's that concern, a bit like, and you know, we're hearing all these stories in the newspapers just now, and in the news about sexual harassment cases, and people who are coming forward and explaining what happened to them, and how they were terrified to bring it up at that point, because in their case they may lose their job or something may happen. In some cases, they did, because they wouldn't go, you know, and advance a relationship with their boss or whoever it was. So. Yeah. You know, I wonder if this similar kind of thing happens here. People think, well, I don't want to cause any hassle because I like going to that particular shopping centre, or I like that shop, and I don't want to end up in a difficult situation.
Do you know, I think the sad thing about what's going on with the sexual harassment cases now are that a lot of people are looking at it, and this is not a personal opinion, but a lot of people are looking at it as being quite bandwagon-y, and why didn't you bring it up then? And it's just a shame that people felt that they couldn't bring it up at the time because they were frightened of the backlash or losing their job or, you know, whatever. So, you know, there is strength in unity. And I think, you know, obviously, it's not to say that, you know, we're looking for every single blind person to jump on a bandwagon now and you know, take out legal suits against companies. But, you know, I think if you are not getting anywhere with a company, then it definitely needs to be tackled.
We also live in a world where people lose interest very quickly. And that's another problem, isn't it? I mean, we live in a Facebook age. Well, some people live in a we live in a Facebook age. But, you know, this world where information comes in and then it goes away, people get shocked for a day and then they move on to something else. I mean, there are some horrific atrocities happening around the world. And, you know, they're in the news for a day and then they're gone because, you know, something's happened in Hollywood. And, you know, that news is gone and you think, but hang on, that atrocity is still happening over here, but I can't get anyone's attention. And I think we're trying to fight through that noise as well. And it's very difficult, isn't it, when these stories come out as they do, nearly every day or every week or so, stories like yours come out. How do you keep it at the top of people's minds, Stan?
Well, I think, you know, a lot the part of the problem with guide dog discrimination is that there hasn't been a big case in the court to set the precedent. To, you know, to make other companies listen up and do things. And I think also there's a lot of different organizations doing different things in this arena. And, you know, the likes of organizations like RNIB and Guide Dogs, you know, although they are really good organizations and they do a lot, they don't have the resources to keep fighting guide dog refusals and all of this sort of thing as well. And so that's why, you know, at the end of the day, Guide Dogs initially was set up to give people guide dogs. It wasn't set up to sue people. And that's why, you know, people have to do that off their own back and use other organizations that can help them to do that. But there isn't a big social media campaign or there isn't anything on TV about refusals. Or, you know, you might see a guide dog refusal case in a newspaper, but it might be in like a local newspaper rather than a national one. So a bit like you were saying about sexual harassment cases. Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's obviously really bad that that's all happened. But on the flip side of that, it's a good thing that it's actually out there. Everyone's talking about it. And it's getting the message out there about it. Whereas blindness doesn't really, we never seem to get the message out there to the masses. It's only really to blind people. You know, we're converting blind people that already know about the issue, but actually we need to convert employers and companies that are not aware of the issues that need to train their staff on how to solve the issue.
I suppose everybody's different and, you know, it's a difficult situation to kind of talk about in many respects because as far as I'm concerned, you know, I have been refused from shops and taxis before. I have been onto the management of that particular company, you know, to deal with it and sort it out. For me personally, I don't feel it's a big enough problem in my life to take it any further, to go to court. I mean, you know, I do what I can through, you know, my radio program and through the Weekly Connect to raise awareness about these kind of issues. But I just, you know, for me personally, I wouldn't be the kind of person that would want to take it to court, because I would feel a wee bit kind of, I don't know whether I would feel as if I was kind of wasting people's time. There's more important issues. And I don't mean that to sound...
No, but I know what you mean, because you don't want to do it because it happened to you, but you got over it and that's fine.
Yes.
Whereas, you know, someone else may be emotionally scarred by it, but what can they do?
Yeah,
I think that's definitely the challenge, isn't it?
Yeah, and here's the question,
Dan. Does it need to happen to someone like David Blunkett or Stevie Wonder before anybody pays any attention to this issue on a national level? It almost needs a face, doesn't it? It almost needs someone that people know to say that is an absolute disgrace. Because if you, and I don't want to compare it to sexual harassment cases, but since that's big in the news at the moment, you know, let's compare that, not like for like, but at least in the sense of, you know, a big story that people aren't really talking about, suddenly they are talking about. And I'm not saying it should happen to anybody like that, but, you know, if it was to happen to a Stevie Wonder or a David Blunkett, that might be the thing that makes people go, right, this is ridiculous, this needs to change.
Yeah, definitely. And Lord Chris Holmes is actually an ambassador for guide dog refusals, and he, you know, talks about it in the House of Lords and sort of bangs the drum because he's also a guide dog owner. So he is ambassador in it in terms of all the politics and that sort of thing. And I know guide dogs are doing a big campaign on Access All Areas and trying to get awareness training compulsory for all taxi drivers. So there are things going on. But again, you know, a lot of people might not know about what is going on as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a topic we could talk about all day and night, I'm sure. Let's move on to your next topic. You wanted to talk about public perception. Now, I guess this kind of ties in, and we've probably already started talking about this, I guess. But there's a whole sort of heap of things underneath that as well. What's your sort of view on public perception and people's awareness of us as blind people?
Okay, so first of all, I've never used a cane or a guide dog before. It's all very new to me using that. So first of all, there's that acceptance personally. You know, accepting a cane or a guide dog was quite a big thing for me. So now I have a light over my head that everybody knows that I'm blind, whereas I didn't have that before. So it's been a very interesting journey. So first of all, you know, people, they might not realize that it is a guide dog. Like I said earlier, they might think that it's you're a police officer and it's a police dog, or you're a dog trainer. So sometimes people don't even know what the dog is. Second of all, everyone wants to talk to you. So it's really exhilarating in that way. Like, people wouldn't come up to your cane, your white cane, and start stroking that the same way they'd come up to your dog and start stroking that.
If they did, you'd be really worried.
So it's been an interesting experience. And just how many people want to talk to you and tell you about their dogs and their dogs' names and all of the dogs that they have. And, you know, it's really interesting. And then you get questions like, oh, are you partially blind or are you fully blind? Because they notice that I'm using my phone. So they'll be like, and people will look at me and then they'll look at the phone and then they'll look back at me and then they'll look at the dog and they can't put two and two together because I'm using my phone with magnification whilst using a guide dog. So it's that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then people also, you know, they'll try and stroke your dog whilst you're trying to cross the road, which is an interesting one, and you sort of tell them not to. But also for me, it's getting used to telling people, please don't stroke it, because I think that's a big thing to get used to, because I'm not used to it at all. So I'm now getting used to telling people no. And I think that for me, that's quite a big thing, just to get used to telling people no, please don't stroke the dog when it's working.
So it's interesting because it depends who you ask, I guess, but, you know, in your case, are you for or against all of that? I mean, are you happy about that? Because I imagine it's a bit of a change to your everyday life.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm happy about it, definitely. I mean, because, you know, people talk to you, it breaks down the barrier. People now know that I'm blind, so if I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to walk into them. In terms of having a guide dog, it's been exhilarating, it's been amazing. I would much rather have a dog than walk around with nothing, to be honest. It's made my life completely different. and I'm a lot more faster now when I'm walking, and I'm feeling a lot more confident. My whole body position is upright, and I just feel, you know, really a lot better. But on the flip side of that, I also notice that people, using my residual vision, I can see people looking at me. I feel like I'm on show all the time.
Do you know, this is not uncommon. Our very own Simon Pauly, the presenter of Afternoon Edition, he is constantly being looked at in a very kind of odd way when he'll get on a bus and he'll bring out his blind pass and they look at him as if to say, well, where's your cane? Where's your dog? You know, they don't realise that he is partially sighted. He is pretty much, you know, well, very limited central vision. And, you know, it can be really quite emasculating for a man, I think, at times.
Definitely,
you know, to be made to feel that you're you know, trying to get off with ATP or something, you know, whatever your bus journey is. And, you know, I do actually feel quite a lot of sympathy for people who have the kind of partial sight but don't necessarily need a cane or a dog. I think that must be terribly frustrating and terribly difficult.
Yeah, and I can sometimes see, you know, the benefit of having no vision, because sometimes you're sort of annoyed by the way that people look at you, whereas if you can't see it, you probably wouldn't even be, you wouldn't be annoyed by it. So I was sat down the other day outside a shop, and it's funny how people pass judgment on you as well. So I was sat down outside a coffee shop smoking, and a lady walked past and said to her friend that I overheard, "Oh, what's he doing with a guide dog smoking? That's terrible." You know, and it's like people pass judgment on you, but they wouldn't have done that before I had a guide dog or a cane. So I just find it very unusual that people feel like they can say things like that.
They wouldn't do it in earshot, would they? They would wait till they were somewhere else and then they would do it, perhaps.
Yeah. But
yeah, I know. I mean, I went through all this in the last, I'm trying to think how long I've been using my white cane for again, maybe about a year, 2 years now, maybe, I don't know. But it was that was a horrible experience going back to the cane. I went through a period of just ignoring it and pretending it didn't exist, and, you know, didn't want to use it and all of that stuff, and then having to use it again. And, you know, Jill, it's interesting, I know exactly what you're talking about with Simon, because I'd got on a bus, I was going to college one day, and I got on the bus, used my cane that day because it was very bright, and then, you know, the next day I got a bit scared with it and I put it back in my bag, and I got on the same, well, not the same bus, but a bus, and it was the same driver, and he said, "Oh, you had your cane yesterday, not today. At it, are we?" I mean, that's what he said. And
oh my goodness,
you know, you just felt, I want the ground to swallow me up at this point, because there's people there, and you just feel you're much more exposed as a blind person, and it's as if you're as if someone's waiting to expose you as a fraud. I mean, you're right. I mean, you know, using your phone. I've a friend of mine who, he was using his phone in a tube he uses a guide dog, and he got his phone out, and he was on the tube in London, and someone turned around and started tutting at him, as if, well, clearly you're a fraud.
Yeah, and, so I've noticed that a lot more in London, actually, when I've been on the tube, a lot more people, you know, doing that. And I'm generally with my PA, who I got, and she's sighted, so she notices it a lot as well. She said, you know, I can really notice people, they do look, and then they look you up and down, and they look at the dog as if to say, you know, how are you doing that? And again, it goes back down to lack of education and awareness, and we're not on TV, or, you know, we're not really seen, you know. And a lot of blind people, maybe they only go out to their local shops or local pubs, and they don't, and we're not seen. Because when I went to a bar the other day, I got refused entry. And part of the reason was because they've never had a blind person in there with a guide dog before.
Oh, yeah, you know, and I love
they've
that phrase.
Been open for like 20 years. And you just think, you know, where are we all? Where are we?
I love that line. I don't know if you've heard that one, Jill. Oh, we've never had a blind person before.
Yeah.
What does that even mean?
Do you know, just going back to the fraud thing, it just kind of triggered a memory for me. And I remember being at the train station and rushing to get a train. My mum was when she was dying, and she was very, very unwell in hospital. And I remember rushing to get a train, and I was so late. You know, my taxi had been held up, and da 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 da. And I got to the gate with my guide dog, and the guy said, "Have you got your blind pass?" And I said, "I do, but it's in my bag somewhere. I'm going to miss my train. I really need to get onto this train. Can I show it on the train?" And he flatly refused. Now, I'm standing there with a guide dog, and I said to him, "Look, I'm not trying to pretend I'm blind. I have not nicked somebody else's guide dog. This is my guide dog, genuinely. I'm not trying to get away with the fare. I'll pay the fare if I have to. I just need to get on that train. And he flat refused. And, you know, by the time I found my pass and he did let me through, the train had gone. And, you know, that was me. I had to wait another 45 minutes for a train. And I just thought, you know, why would you do that? Why would you do that if I was standing there with a guide dog, so obviously blind?
Because you clearly went out, you spent the 4 week period learning how to use a guide dog, doing all of that, just so you could get a free ride 2 stops on a train. So that's what you do. Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, I mean, it's just ridiculous. And it's all this public perception stuff. But I wonder, though, if we are more aware, maybe we're too aware of it, and maybe we look for people to say things or think things because perhaps our confidence isn't as great.
Maybe.
Yeah, and that's an interesting perspective. And I think, yeah, that could be something. But then there's also something about the way that people speak to you. And I think, you know, you can't be paranoid about the way that people speak to you because it is just the way that people speak to you. And I've noticed it since not using anything, people didn't know that I was blind. So I was invisibly blind to everybody else. Now I become visible blind. People speak to you in a slight different tone. And I can notice it. Not everybody. I'm not saying everybody does. But, you know, there are certain people that do. But I am quite authoritative and will tell people, you know, you don't need to speak to me like that. Whereas not everybody is like that. Of course not. And I've also noticed that people will speak to my PA rather than me. And they'll ask questions about my dog. And they'll be like, oh, so how old is he then to her? And I'll be saying, oh, no, it's my dog, not hers. You know.
Do people
talk to you?
So
you have to be
you
quite witty with it.
Yeah, you do. And I guess, I don't know about you, but, you know, I've had a couple of occasions where people talk to me like I'm a small child.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, come over here, and are you okay? Yeah. And, you know, it's all very, you know, and it's almost like they're terrified to touch you in case they catch it.
Yeah.
It's a very difficult thing. And, you know, I always think going out with my cane, and I don't know about being with a dog, maybe hopefully one day I will know this, but I often think it's like day one every time.
Mm.
Because no matter how confident you get, no matter how much you experience, no matter how much you go through, no matter how many times you tell people how wonderful, you know, the cane helps and, you know, what you do and how the phone can help and all that stuff, as people ask questions about it, it just takes you to go out the next day and meet one person who just doesn't get it.
Yeah.
And thinks you're a fraud or thinks the whole thing's a lie or, you know, shouts benefit cheat or whatever happens, and it knocks you back to day one. It's like a blind version of Groundhog Day.
Definitely. And it goes back to what you said last week on your show about being a blind ambassador. And, you know, sometimes you just want to sit on a train or a bus and not be asked questions about your dog and not be asked questions about your blindness, because otherwise it seems to be like the common focus of everybody wants to talk to you about it. Mm-hmm. And you can't, you know, sit down. You know, I educate people for a living, but I don't want to educate people when I'm relaxing on a train on my way home from educating people.
See, this is where, you know, I think myself and maybe quite a lot of blind people differ. I don't know. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it, you know, so do get in touch with us. But I do think, as a blind person, I am an ambassador for my charity. I feel, as a guide dog owner, I'm an ambassador for, you know, guide dogs. I feel that anybody in a wheelchair is an ambassador for their disability, because we can't, as disabled people, moan about people not knowing enough about our disabilities if we feel, you know, aggrieved at having to sit on a bus or sit in a train and tell people about our disabilities. I think people are naturally curious. It's an opening for me to, you know, get talking to somebody if I'm feeling a bit bored on a long train journey. You know, if they want to ask me questions, fine. I'll move the conversation on once they've, you know, got their bit. But I do feel as if I am an ambassador, and it's my job to try and educate people about blindness. And maybe it's just me. So many people disagree with me.
No. And I agree with you. I agree with you to an extent. But, you know, sometimes when you've educated people all day long and you're on a train and you're tired, it's just not the time to do that. You know, I think because I do that for a living, I sometimes, you know, get a bit fed up of educating people constantly. And I, you know, so I can see what you mean. But at the same time, when you're tired and you're on a train, sometimes you just want to sit and not talk to anybody, don't you? So
I think
there's that as well. But people will still want to talk to you about your dog.
I can see this from both sides, though, because Jill's absolutely right and you're right. Mm. But the problem is that it's the person you might be talking to. Say you're sitting across from someone on that train that night. That person might never come into contact with a blind person again. I mean, that could happen. And you are that only link between them meeting another blind person. So I get that. I totally get your frustrations about it because I don't always want to answer. I mean, it seems to me whenever I get assistance at airports or train stations, I always get asked questions. And I find that a bit odd because these are assistance guys. They must meet people who are disabled all the time. That's their job, isn't it? So
of course,
I find it a bit odd that I get asked lots of questions, but I don't know if they're uncomfortable and they don't know what else to ask because they think, well, I can't ask him if he watched Coronation Street last night because he's blind and he doesn't watch television because blind people just sit and listen to Radio 4 all day or RNIB Connect Radio. So, you know, that might be it. Maybe they just don't feel comfortable about asking anything else. I don't know. But, you know, you do feel that you're always open for business in that respect.
And I think if I was sitting on a train and I didn't want to speak to anybody or on a plane, I just close my eyes. And that would be the way
I would...
Yeah,
I'd never be rude. I'd never be rude to somebody, but it's just, you know, you don't want that to be the focus of every single conversation that you have because it becomes... You know, I've only done it for 4 weeks and I'm sort of getting a bit bored of talking about dogs.
Oh, sure. But, you know, I think it's just...
So when you've done it for 20 years, I can see how that must grate on you a bit. But you should never be rude to someone. And I totally get that because, you know, people might perceive it that all blind people are rude. And, you know, some people are just rude people, not because they're blind. But, you know, I would never be rude to somebody.
Oh, no, definitely not.
Well, blind people can be horrible as well. I mean, we can be horrible people. I mean, you know, this is it. I mean, it goes back to that thing we've said a few times on the show about being a homogenous group. We're not all the same. Some of us are lovely. Yeah. I mean, I'm lovely. Jill is, you know, whatever. But, you know, we can all be what we are, who we are. We're all different, and that's the point. You
Definitely.
Know, we should be like that. We should embrace that to some degree. I was crossing the road the other day with a guy who helped me across the road, and he said, I need to go because I think I've got a ticket on my car. So we had a bit of a chat, just for a second. It was like one of those, well, I hope you don't have any tickets in your car. And he kind of looked at me as if to say, hang on a minute, this isn't in the script. We should be talking about your blindness. You know, he just didn't know how to respond back. You know, I was having a conversation with him about him rather than me.
And some people, they do that when you make a joke as well, and they think, oh my God, that blind person makes a joke.
You're so funny.
And I laugh it off a lot of the time. I use a lot of humour in these situations, and people will be like, oh, your dog's so beautiful. And I'd be like, oh, thank you. I know I am.
You've got to, though. You've got to bring
humour. And then they're like, oh, I didn't mean you. And then, you know, and then it starts the conversation. So there's all different conversation starters that you can do. And I think humour definitely brings it to life and makes people realise that you're just a normal person.
And have you found a partner by doing that yet?
No, not yet.
Still working single. On that one, right? Okay. Yeah, right. I mean, public perception obviously comes in so many different ways, and I know you wanted to talk about customer service as well. I guess this kind of takes us further. This goes from the being refused to the shop to actually getting into the shop, and then what happens then?
Yeah.
So what's your sort of views on customer service that you want to share?
So since I've had a guide dog, I've realised that there's a lot of really nice people out there and a lot of really nice people that deliver really good service. So, for example... in the gym that I go to, you know, they couldn't do enough for me. They said, oh, we can have the dog in the reception area. The manager got me a dog bowl. He got me a dog mat as well for the dog to lie on. And whenever I go to the gym, they all love having the dog there. It sort of makes their day. So, you know, that's been really, really good. And then he sort of said to me, oh, is the gym bright enough for you? And I said, oh, well, we could do with some more lights if possible. And in the sauna, we could get some more lights because it is quite dark. And I don't want to sit on people's laps and stuff like that. He's actually put that in place.
We actually thought the same thing.
Yeah.
We actually thought the same thing at the same time. I'm thinking, don't we?
Unless it was you, Jill, of course. So, yeah.
Well, you want to sit on my lap, Dan. You want to sit on my lap.
You can sit on mine if you want.
Yes, I think that'd be a better idea.
I'm not happy about the way I'm being left out of this, quite
frankly. This is like blind date now.
It's gone a bit. But shall I just leave? I'll just leave you to it. Okay. I can get the other train.
So they can't do enough for me. So they've been really, really good. And then on the flip side of that, you know, you get people that just really just don't understand them. So you check into a hotel, for example, and they'll just say, oh, your room's down there on the corridor. Mm. And then they won't offer to help you. So I'll just say, oh, would you mind helping me to the room? But just some people don't use their initiative. And I think, you know, some of it is training, but also some of it is just using a common sense approach. And you also get people I've realized that are really fearful. So they don't want to say the wrong thing and offend you. And, you know, and again, part of that is training and requirements that, you know, I think also working with different organizations, delivering training, a lot of organizations don't see visual impairment high on their agenda. So they don't actually want visual impairment awareness training, for example, because then they have to have autism awareness and deaf awareness and all them other things. So it's generally not high on people's agenda is what I've realized as well.
They might
just get disability awareness, which covers everything. And then they don't really focus much on how to guide people or how to communicate and stuff like that.
I think the one that gets me the most is when people try to joke about my blindness to show that they're cool with it. Like, yeah. You know, it's almost like, you know, I'm going to make a joke about you being blind because it's going to make you feel more comfortable about me being comfortable about you being comfortable about me. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
And I just think, you know, you don't know me well enough. And yeah. You know, it doesn't offend me because I'm really not easily offended, to be honest. Mm. I don't care about, you know, a lot of things when it comes to, you know, people and their opinions of my blindness. But at the end of the day, I do feel cringy for them because I think, oh, no, you've just gone overboard to try and make yourself really cool with my disability. And it's just so not worked.
Yeah, yeah. And then do you get that thing where they say, oh, are you okay to sign? Oh, I always get that all the time. Are you okay to sign?
I have to say this. I just want to, because we are running short of time, and I just want to put this in as a, not really a conversation point, because we probably don't have enough time to get into it all, but I'd like to hear other people's thoughts on this. I have, through this job, been at so many different hotels and places over my lifetime, and I've experienced so many different people from different cultures who help and assist. And one thing that really irritates me is that there are some people who will, as people do about us as blind people, you know, lump us all into one group. This idea that, you know, well, you know, sometimes when you meet someone who's foreign, they just don't get it. You know, it's a cultural difference, and maybe in their culture they don't have blind people or some rubbish like that, and they've never met a blind person before. And I've got to say, I don't know about you guys, but I've often found that some of the best customer experience I've had has been from people from different cultures, different countries, of all different backgrounds. And it's got nothing to do with that. And I know that's something that does come up a lot in conversations when people talk about this, not necessarily on the radio.
I've been very, very well treated in different countries across Europe, in, you know, various different countries across Africa. I've had really fantastic, very respectful treatment, actually, about my blindness.
Yeah, me too.
In countries that, you know, are supposed to be, you know, maybe not as genned up on disability as the UK are supposed to be. I find in the likes of Portugal, Spain, Morocco, Egypt in particular, so respectful, so incredibly respectful. And actually, it's interesting to know that all the pharaohs of the day in Egypt, they only employed blind harp players, and the blind harp players were extremely revered. It was a great honour to be blind and a harp player. And it was so that he would have the blind harp player entertain his wives and women, and he couldn't look at them.
Wow.
There you go. Wow. So the blindness kind of goes back a long way, you know, and respect for blindness goes back a long way in Egypt.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I had that recently when I went to the Canary Islands with a friend of mine who's also visually impaired, and they couldn't do enough for us when we, you know, they knew we were blind. They couldn't do enough for us. They were waiting on hand and foot. Anything you need, we will come to your room. We will help you. We will get your food from the buffet. And it wasn't seen as an issue. It wasn't seen like they were doing you a favor. It wasn't seen like you were a problem. It was just an amazing service. And I was blown away by that experience, to be honest.
I'm just so sick of people been down on the immigrants. You know, it's like I'm sick of it in this country. Yeah. We hear so many people, you know, it's, oh, you know, they're only here for this and they're only here for that. And, you know, everything's blamed on immigrants and immigrants are rubbish at everything. And I just sometimes feel a little bit of an allegiance because, you know, I get so much of that as a blind person. And I think we've all faced some of that in our lives. You know, we're professionals in our jobs.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Use that term loosely for us, but
yeah, we'll speak for Dan.
Yeah, just for Dan in this case. But you know, this is what we do. We do it well. But you know, other people just, you know, going back to that point of the taxi driver who once said to me once, you know, oh, that's nice. They gave you a job. You know, they whoever
at your
they
club.
Are at my club. Yeah. Oh, they pay. They pay you. Do they? They pay you in Tuits and all this nonsense. I feel it's we've got to stand up for that as well, you know. And again, that whole point about it's not one group of people or one, you know, we're all different, and that's we've got to celebrate that, but we've got to acknowledge it as well.
And there are people from abroad that may refuse you entry. Equally, there are people from this country that may refuse you entry. But what I would say about that though is that, you know, a lot of people when people get their citizenship to live in the UK, there isn't a question about guide dogs and the law around it. So at the end of the day, you don't know what you don't know. And if you've come from a country where you don't have guide dogs in your country and you don't know about blind people, then really our country should be empowering them when they get their citizenships to know what guide dogs are and, you know, to know the laws around guide dogs as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Dan, it's been great talking to you. I've really enjoyed our chat this hour. Thank you so much for coming on. Just for those
Pleasure.
Who want to know more about Visualize and what you do, how can they find out more?
So you can go on my website, which is www.visualizetrainingandconsultancy.co.uk. And I've recently done a video about a documentary about my first guide dog. So you can watch that as well. Or you can also follow me on Twitter at VisualizeTC.
Daniel, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you today. It really has. And I do hope the guide dog refusals stop. It's not indicative of the way, you know, it usually goes for guide dog owners. But, you know, I do hope your experience gets a lot better. And thank you so much for joining us today. It's been really interesting.
Pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dan. And Jill, that is it for another week. We are out of here, but people can always get in touch.
Oh, they can indeed. You just need to look on our fully accessible website. It's rnibconnectradio.org.uk. All our contact details are there. Or you can email theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk.
Until next week, thank you, Jill.
Thank you very much, Stephen.
And remember, when it's Mondays at 1, it's The Weekly Connect. Goodbye.
Bye.